ప్రేమ స్వరూపులైన విద్యార్థులారా, విద్యా బోధకులారా, విద్యాభిమానులారా,
I am like the roaring lion in the dream. My roaring will wake you up from this dream unto reality.
This is The Lion's Roar, the DSI podcast all about understanding the teachings of Satya Sai Baba in their truest form.
Sai Ram, friends. This is Nalin.
Sai Ram, and I'm Sanjeevan. Wow, what a ride Discourse 4 has been. We've spent 7 episodes looking at this goldmine, and Swami has dropped numerous truth bombs along the way about the nature of our senses. How are you feeling about it, Nalin?
Bro, I feel like Swami has given us this really handy starter pack to become the master of our senses.
So, would you say you're the master of your senses now?
I don't know if anyone can say that they have mastered their senses, can they? One moment you think you've got it under control, and the next you don't. We've got to constantly monitor it. Think of it this way. A hunter who has caught a wild beast will always have an eye on it, right? You just never know what the beast might do.
Absolutely. In fact, there was so much to learn, I reckon it's probably worthwhile for us to recap 10 key points from the discourse.
Point 1. A measuring tool with limits.
Swami introduced us to a very revealing name for the senses. Matraha, or measuring tool. The senses are tools we use to measure the world around us, just like a ruler is used to measure the length of other objects.
We also looked at another meaning of matraha, which is limit. A ruler can measure length, but not weight. In the same way, the senses are limited in that they have been prescribed certain functions which define their purpose. Point 2. The restless horses.
Do you remember the chariot analogy? Let's do a quick recap. The chariot represents the body, and the horses represent the senses, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. Just as the charioteer controls the horses by holding the reins, the intellect controls the senses with the mind.
And within the chariot rides the master, us.
You know, the interesting thing about horses is that some part of their body is always moving, no matter whether they are running, standing, or even sleeping. You see, our senses are exactly like this. This is why Swami refers to the Sanskrit word ashwa, which means restless, to describe the senses.
If these wild horses aren't tamed, then our chariot will be pulled in all kinds of wayward direction.
Point 3. Aiming to please or aiming for peace.
The senses being likened to horses also gave us a bit of perspective on how we should manage them. If you think about it, it's pretty simple. We shouldn't give in to our senses or pamper them. In an effort to appease them, we end up fattening them. Swami says doing so is like trying to honor and respect the senses, as if we were taking the horses and putting them inside the chariot.
And this is where our 10 wives come in, the 5 organs of perception and the 5 organs of action, each insisting on enjoying objects of its own choice. Suppose, Sanji, you are sitting in a lecture hall. You're meant to be concentrating on what is being presented, but your nose smells the hot chips that your friend next to you is devouring, and your ears want to listen to the conversation happening 2 rows behind you. And at the same time, your eyes want to watch the cricket match streaming on someone's phone in front of you. Now, how can we give in to the whims and fancies of the senses, trying to please them all at once and still be at peace? A futile attempt to try and please 10 wives all at once.
Point 4. E equals equanimity squared.
What we need for peace is to harmonize the senses through equal-mindedness, which means to remove the labels of duality, to no longer perceive things as good or bad, as pleasant or unpleasant, to simply see things as they are. Remember Tukaram and Kabir? They were the epitome of equanimity.
What about Einstein?
Oh yeah.
Swami has given his example in this discourse as well. Einstein used to spend all his time in his study, absorbed in his work. As a result, he would often miss the calls of his wife, even miss meals. She would lose her temper and shout at him rudely. One day, after many repeated calls, she had enough. She was so enraged with this careless behavior, she stormed in and emptied a jug of water on his head, accompanied by an earful. Einstein, though, was chill. He smiled and joked. Every day it used to be only lightning and thunder, but today it is a heavy downpour on my head.
Yeah, and see, through Einstein's forbearance and his composure and, in this case, his humor, Swami has shown what control over the senses looks like. Point 5. The Shakti of Bhakti.
We looked at a very powerful statement that Swami made. You need not feel disheartened with the fear that you will not be able to control the senses. By developing pure, one-pointed devotion and having complete surrender to God, the senses can definitely be brought under control. Tukaram and Kabir's examples demonstrated what one needs is purity of one's impulses, sincerity of purpose, and determination in treading the divine path. And when we have these, then our environment doesn't matter at all when it comes to sense control.
So developing these traits and practices protects us from the waywardness of senses and sensual pleasures. Swami has made it so simple for us, hasn't he? We just have to focus on God, and that gives us the power. The Shakti of Bhakti, a strength that is beyond us. And with this power on our side, controlling the senses is totally doable.
Exactly. It's doable because it's not us doing it, is it? Swami takes over. But if Swami is doing it all the heavy lifting, then what do we do?
Friends, did you catch that? Or were you listening to something else?
Point 6. Sense incentives.
Swami explains that by setting a higher incentive, we can give ourselves a desirable diversion to overcome distraction. The music that was playing loudly is like a stronger incentive to divert your ears away from the distractions, which in this example are our voices.
As Swami says, when the attention of any sense organ is distracted by something, it should be diverted to another desirable thing by means of a stronger incentive or disincentive. That's when it'll give up its crazy digressions and take to the right path.
So what should this desirable diversion be? Let's revisit Swami's explanation in Prasnottaravahini. Only that spiritual practice with the goal of realizing the supreme truth is proper. Anything else will lead us astray sooner or later. And we must have some kind of diversion to keep the senses occupied. If the senses are kept busy in the right way, they will be our slaves. Otherwise, we become theirs.
Point 7. See always inside.
You might recall the phrase, Lord of the Animals? Swami explained that Pashu, or animal, is one whose vision is externally oriented. But we need to turn our vision inward. We need to aim to be Pashupati. Lord of the senses, not slave of the senses.
Yeah. I try to remember this by one of Swami's definitions of Sai. See always inside. I'm curious though, Nalin. We've heard the phrase turn inward so often, but what is external and what is internal?
That is an interesting question. If our eyes are closed, have we gone inward? During the 1973 summer course, Swami speaks about Atma Drishti, vision on the Atma. When our vision is turned inward, we don't notice dualities such as pleasure and pain, sorrow and happiness. In fact, we don't notice any differences or disparities whatsoever. So whether our eyes are open or closed, as long as we are seeing differences, boundaries, and not oneness, then our vision is not inward.
Hold my prasadam. So what I've been thinking of as inward is still not inward?
The senses are lording it over us even in that space. Point 8. A knife coated in honey.
You know what though? All this talk of senses, and it turns out we can't even trust them. Swami says that sensual pleasures are deceptive. They are sorrow master's pleasure. And the pleasure they give us, just temporary.
Yeah, that's right. It's like the mud cake example we've talked about before. First bite, delicious. Over the next few bites, we think in the back of our mind, okay, this is very sweet. Moments later, we feel so physically sick that we won't even take a sixth bite. Desire, then disgust. Pleasure, then pain. It's all so momentary.
Swami tells us to contemplate on this momentary and deceptive nature of sensual pleasures. With this awareness, we can develop discrimination and detachment to keep the senses in check.
Point 9. Defects and dualities.
Some people love mud cakes and others don't care for it at all. Why is that? I mean, mud cake is a mud cake.
Yeah, well, it tastes different to different people. Some find it too sweet, others too moist, but fundamentally, these are just labels, right? They're just measurements that our senses have made.
Yeah, that's right. It's pretty clear that what we perceive through the senses is subjective. But Swami takes it one step further and clarifies that the defect is not in the senses, but in our vision.
If you think about it, God's vision is free of duality. For Him, there's no purity or impurity, no good or bad. It's nothing too sweet or too moist.
So then, it is our thoughts and feelings which taint our view of the world and send us into a spiral of judgment and justification. As we think, so we become.
See, this actually takes us back to that idea of equanimity. Speaking of that, it's important to consider that we may see good and bad and then retrofit an equanimous label to the event and think, ha, this is equal-mindedness. But rather, just like Tukaram, we should be immersed in the truth so that we do not see things as good and bad in the first place. Point 10. Freedom from, not of.
Okay, hold on. Cut us some slack here. God's the one who gave us eyes to watch a cricket match in our lecture, ears to listen to gossip, a nose to sniff hot chips, and hands and tongue to grab and devour a mud cake. To err is human, right?
No! Remember what Swami said? He says we must use the power of discrimination He has blessed us with and not make excuses saying to err is human. He says it's understandable if animals behave like we do, but humans must rise above.
It seems like animals have the freedom to do whatever they want. We are human. Shouldn't we have the same freedom?
Well, see, Swami said in this discourse that true freedom is freedom from the senses, not of the senses. Rather than aspiring for the freedom to indulge in sensual pleasures, we should strive for detachment from them. Imagine what it would be to be free from the whims and fancies, from the deception and the distraction of the senses.
It might feel like there are so many steps to follow. Didn't Swami Himself say at the very start that no one can control their body, mind and senses? So why bother? It's all too hard, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. There are more than a few methods here which Swami has given us. But remember, it is us who are looking for these nuggets of truth. These are not simply instructions. These are answers to the questions we have asked. Surely we should at least give it a go.
It's just like Swami says. If you take one step towards me, I will take 100 towards you. We might not be able to control the senses, but Swami can and will. All we need to do is make the effort.
It's time to bring this episode to an end. Dear brothers and sisters, we'd love to know, did you take away something from the discourse that wasn't on our list? Check the links in the description to share your thoughts with us. We'd love to connect and keep the conversation and the learning going.
The next time we meet, it'll be a new year, a new you, and time for new beginnings. Let's chase away the bats in the belfry and put on our royal slippers as we head out into the light of Discourse 5, the road to divinity. Until next time,
stay rawesome.